Welcome to today's episode, the podcast where we discuss a recent installment of a different TV series every show. Countdown serves as the pilot of Three Body Problem, Netflix's new mind-bending sci-fi mystery, which just came out March 21st. It's based on the Remembrance of Earth's Past trilogy by Lu Suxin, a Chinese author. The first time that you told me about this show, all you said was, it's the three-body show, you do research for it. I looked it up online, I went, bodies, bodies, bodies. And came up with the movie. Pete Davidson. I was like, he's got a new show already? Isn't he doing his own?
You know, he actually said he wasn't going to be doing Bupkis, even though season two, even though it was renewed.
How's that going to work?
He decided he's just done with it. No, I think that the show is just done, even though it got renewed for season two.
But wouldn't they, like, before they renewed it, like, talk to him?
he said that phase of his life was done. I think that was a direct quote.
Anyway, so I figured out that Three Body Problem is actually a famous book, the first of this trilogy by Lu Suxin, and that he is probably the most famous Chinese, the most celebrated sci-fi author in China as of right now.
Oh, wow.
His books have been endorsed by George R.R. Martin, Mark Zuckerberg, Barack Obama.
Wait, George R.R. Martin, because he'd be wise adapted Game of Thrones, so he took something that George R.R. Martin once again recommended and did
no,
it here?
No, George R.R. Martin didn't recommend it to D.B. Wise.
Oh,
what
okay.
happened was, okay, so I want to play a little game here to start it off, but it starts with talking about TV series and movies, so I guess we'll skip over to the third section, then we'll go back.
Okay.
So it's called They Said It Couldn't Be Done, David Benioff and D.B. Wise Returning to Make a Successful Television Program. I say that because in all the interviews that are talking about this show, they like to kind of script it as if they just launched from Game of Thrones straight into this thing.
Right,
a
no,
long path.
Because there was the Star Wars thing that they were set to do as well.
You would remember in 2017, still when Game of Thrones was well-liked, right?
Season 7, yeah.
Confederate was greenlit on HBO. That was the planned alternative history drama television series, kind of like Manhunt, taking place in the Civil War, mm-hmm. but where the Civil War actually ends in a stalemate and slavery stayed legal.
That's now, a little bit like Man in the High Castle.
It is. It was like Amazon's, or a response to Amazon's Man in the High Castle. However, there was a huge backlash of people saying, this is just slavery fan fiction. Why do we want to see this? Mm. And so after a year, it kind of like went away. And in 2018, they signed a deal, yes, to work on the next Star Wars trilogy. But by then, Game of Thrones had already shown that it had lost its footing.
I think that if you had typed in bad writers, it was either year 2019 or 2018, it came up with a picture of D.B. Wise and David and whoever worked with
them on that.
So it's
like finding their name in the dictionary their picture in the dictionary. And so there was this petition that was signed at the end of Game of Thrones. I remember this. It had like a million and a half signatures, basically asking for their money back, for them to redo it, and also them calling them incompetent writers.
But a lot of the cast was divided on it, right? Like some people I know that Charles Dance, he said that he didn't like the way that ended. But then you had people like Kit Harington who said that he loved the ending.
I don't think anybody in the cast signed the petition. I think that would be ridiculous. But Disney did like kind of shelve that deal. And then instead they signed this thing with Netflix for $200 million.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Peter Friedlander, one of the producers at Netflix, played matchmaker, from what the interviews say, with this Alexander Wu, put them together. Alexander Wu was from the Terror series. He did the second season show running of that. And he said, read this book, check it out. It's really great. They read it. They wanted to do it. And that's what happened. And so here we are. I want to step back, though, because the name of the story is what? Three Body Problem.
Yeah. Now,
do you know what the Three Body Problem is?
No.
It's science.
The thing about the show is that it follows three stories. So that's what I was thinking maybe the title could be talking about. But if it's an actual thing.
I think the show simplifies a lot of the stories. And so, like, for instance, we're following in the show this group of five individuals, which don't exist. Most of the main characters in the show, they exist in a different way, but they don't interact.
So
ever.
The Oxford
scientists,
Five.
The Oxford Five do not. Those are like kind of a made up set of different characters.
That's funny because that was actually the thing that I found most intriguing about
the series.
That's
what they want you to do. They want to be able to adapt this thing, which is very science, hard science based. But the three body problem, if I was to simplify it, is like if you have three suns surrounding your planet. So take three basketballs, right?
Yeah.
And then like say that each basketball is a huge magnet too. So like you have three kids that are all spaced out, let's say like equidistant,
mm-hmm.
and then they start like kind of moving a little bit around each other, so all the basketballs are sort of pulling towards one each other,
right?
And then they all threw those up in the air at the same time. Where would those puppies land? that's almost impossible to calculate because you have to take into effect gravity. And there are so many forces acting on it at that point.
Yeah, the magnetic fields, I feel like, would also be different.
Well, there wouldn't actually be it would be a different type of magnetic field when you're in space. But I was just using magnets to simplify the idea of it. But yes, the sun's gravitational pulls towards one another, while also gravity and everything else and all the other planets and stars out there. Like, there's no way of telling where something in the middle might land or where those objects might go.
That kills one of my theories, because I thought at the very end, when it was showing the sky and it turning different colors, I was thinking we were in maybe some type of simulation, because we saw earlier in the episode, people put on the Oculus Rift Plus, it almost seemed like, and I thought that maybe we were following a story inside of one of those video games or something
like that. You know what it reminded me of, that mask? It reminded me of Cerebro, the show from X-Men. When they stick on that mask and then suddenly they get trapped in that world.
It was also like the Google Glass.
It's like any VR thing. It's with Sword Art Online, Ready Player One, any of those guys. They said it couldn't be done. I have a list of movies. All of them at one point or another were considered to be unadaptable until they tried to adapt them. Some of them have gone on to become big successes. I want you to tell me whether or not you think that these movies have over a 7 on IMDb.
Okay.
Dune and Dune 2.
Yes, both of those have over a 7.
World War Z.
I will say that has under a 7.
World War Z has a 7.
It has exactly a 7.
Exactly a 7. Cloud Atlas.
Cloud Atlas, under 7. I remember that was not liked when it came
out. I'll save that one. Ender's Game.
Ender's Game? Oh, I never saw it, so it makes it a little bit harder.
What do you know about it?
It was based off the book, and then the sequel was Ender's Shadow, which I think follows the same exact event from a different perspective.
The author is famously stubborn of not giving away the rights for the longest time because he didn't think that it could ever make it onto the big screen.
In that case, I will say it's over a 7.
Okay, and then the last one is Ready Player One.
Oh, Ready Player One definitely has over a 7. I don't agree with that rating, but I know that at one point it was even on the top 250 when it was back in theaters.
No, okay, wow. Why don't you agree with it?
Because the changes that they made from the actual source material
were
so much worse.
The people who really wouldn't like this type of show are the people who would have been really big fans of the book, because they had to change a lot to bring this to life. All right, so Cloud Atlas has a 7.4.
Wow.
Ender's Game has a 6.6, and Ready Player One also has a 7.4.
Okay, so I got
Cloud
one
Atlas,
out of those
I believe, has a very low reception on Rotten Tomatoes.
Within, I think it's kind of garnered a cult following ever since it has come out.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the trailer for it was like 5 minutes.
All right. And then last part of the game, we have They Said It Couldn't Be Done. These are with TV shows now, and they're all mind bendy. Foundation, based off books.
Yes.
Over a 7?
Yes, I would say so.
Devs, which is actually not a book-based thing, but an Alex Garland one, but anything Alex Garland related is going
to at one point I knew it was over a 7. I'll say it is.
The
yeah.
scene in this show, the first episode here, where she commits suicide, the scientist lady, she jumps off.
Where she walks into
she's
the
into
room.
That, like, yeah, it looks like a particle accelerator or some form of, like, huge experiment that they're doing, and it's just a gold-plated room, and she jumps to her death. They actually show on the Netflix page the promo how she did it. Like, they show her falling, and she couldn't use her hands as she did a face plant thing, and they had wires, but as she got close enough to the ground, her hands like reflexively came out there to stop her, and so it was almost scary. And then Dark,
yes, obviously has over a 7.
Avatar The Last Airbender.
As of now, I think it has under...
Yeah, the live action.
Yeah, I think it has under 7.
And then Nosferatu.
Nosferatu under 7.
That's not even really a mind-bendy one. I just wanted to throw it in there because it's a book-based show that did not... It was unadaptable. Foundation has a 7.6. Devs has a 7.6. Dark has an 8.7. Too low, I think. Avatar The Last Airbender still has a 7.4.
Oh, okay.
And Nosferatu has a 6.7.
Okay, so I got all of them except I found The Last
now
Airbender.
Now it's time to talk about the actual show. Why don't you give me a short little summary of the first episode?
Sure. In 1966, Beijing physicist Yi Zitai is killed during a protest for teaching the Big Bang Theory. And you said that that was very much true, right? In the 60s, they did have these big protests.
Unlike most of these, we actually watched this first part together. And the interesting thing was, at the beginning of this year, I had listened to a whole Great Courses lecture, The Fall and the Rise of China by Richard D. Baum. He was the one who did the teaching of it. He passed away in 2012. He actually lived through a lot of it. And what was when the first scene started playing out and you saw the Cultural Revolution and they brought the guy out, I immediately knew where it was going, because like there were so many times in China's past, specifically when Mao was chairman, where it wasn't just in the 60s. Before then, the bourgeoisie was like, would be declared the enemy every few years. The educated would be declared the enemy. Anybody who didn't have a working class or a peasant job would be basically taken and put in front of a crowd and demolished or destroyed.
So anyone teaching like evolution, because that was his thing. So, he says right before he dies that it's the most probable outcome, the Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
That's how it happened.
Well, see, that's where it's like drifting off into its own alternate reality, because it wasn't just about like, oh, we hate science. No one was out there being like, we don't believe in it. It was that we don't care about this. These people are holding us down. We want to thrive. We want what they have. And it was true that China in that time was, they would kind of enslave their working class to a point where they would be starving constantly. There were huge amounts of people that were dying, millions of people that were dying. And so there would be these rise ups. And the thing is, Mao would then team up with the people who were rising up, even though he was already in power. And then he would kick off a lot of his own staff, and then he would get them to all unite with him again. And then suddenly it would just be an endless cycle of the same thing over and over again. So when they brought this guy out there, and I've seen it described as like really tragic and crazy, and people weren't expecting to see him all beat up and stuff, but it seemed rather tame to me compared to what
I
had
thought
seen
it was
in
brutal.
History.
I mean,
only five guards that were beating up. In what I remembered, it would be the whole towns or the villages that would bring out these people and just tear them to shreds.
I think it was extra sad because you see the daughter having to watch it, and she's screaming, trying to get them to stop.
And that's
that kind
the main
of is
character,
her,
yes.
That's almost her villain origin. Story. Ye Wenji, she's devastated.
Yeah, Ye Wenji.
And then we get this cool intro scene that reminded me very much of like Westworld, For All Mankind, Game of Thrones. It's very futuristic-y, and you see like different planets, and there's no people. It's like all CGI or some type of thing. Mm-hmm. So I enjoyed the intro very much. And then after that, that's when we're introduced to the Oxford Five, because much like It Chapter 2, they all go to a restaurant because, as we talked about earlier, Vera Yee just decides to kill herself.
How convenient that, like, the best scientists in the world were all part of the same class.
Mm-hmm.
That's the part that I don't get. It's like, I understand you need to make them know each other, but it's like, oh, we're just a group of friends. Like,
well, it's also just the stereotypes.
I'm the nanotech girl, and I
have the main character Augie, who is able to see this counter almost in her head, this timer that seems to be counting down to something.
That's probably one of my favorite sections of it.
That was my favorite part
like
of the story.
When they lean into the sci-fi and it has nothing to do with like, oh, we're going to say physics doesn't exist, and they're just showing you a character that's about to go through something crazy. And they even have that, what was it, Tatiana come up to her and give her the child, what was it, the box of candy, the cereal box token.
Yes.
So that she has
so that
to
she
play
can
with.
Tell, yeah, she can talk about it. And then Jack, also from Game of Thrones, Sam, he shows
there's
up.
There's like four people from
he's
Game of
going
Thrones.
To be, yeah, he's going to be the dick of the crew. As we saw, he's making jokes left and right, almost just about Vera Yee's death. And then we go on to a different storyline. We follow Benedict Wong.
Yeah.
Clarence Shi.
It's the year of the detective, as we've established.
Yes.
In every show that we've done, there's always been a detective character. However, the way that the D.B. Wise guy was talking about why they introduced this storyline, it is like this in the books, but why they kept it as a big deal was because they thought that they could pull in people who like police procedurals. And honestly, to me, like,
at least
in the first episode, I wasn't all that like smitten by the police part of this. I wasn't the investigation part or even the friend group. Like, the part that's drawing me to the show is kind of the ending, the twist, and also like the weird video game and like the maybe figuring out exactly why they're dying, but not through the guy who's just taking pictures.
In terms of all the characters, Augie, I think, is the most interesting. Benedict Wong's cool to see him playing Clarence, but I did not find his detective story to be even remotely, it didn't fit in with the story at all. It seemed like they just kept flashing back to him. I assume he's going to have a bigger part to play as the series goes on.
Last year, China came out with their own version of the series, kind of like with the book. The book came out in China first. It's written in Chinese, and actually, the way the book is written, they don't have the scene with the Cultural Revolution to start it off. That's only in the American adaptation.
Oh,
the author was too afraid because their publishing company said, you're going to get censored for this. So he had to stick it further along in the book. So that's not in the first episode of the Chinese version, but they do have a detective there that is very much more sarcastic than Benedict Wong is shown to be. He's like so much more of the Jack character, except he's just hard up in this guy's butt about like trying to get him to join this evil group or this group that's supposed to be spying on all the scientists.
The 1966 storyline, I feel like, is supposed to be the focal point of the episode. But it was strange because past the first scene, which is about like a 3-minute scene, it's not brought back into the story until about midway through.
Yeah.
By that point, it seemed like it was almost too little too late. Like I had lost all interest in that storyline by that point.
I don't think I've lost interest in her story. I think that it was kind of true to tale that she was then sent to a camp because they don't want her mind like rising up and causing more of a revolution.
But then she slept with one of the security guards after he gave her a book. I think it was Silent Spring.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so that was supposed to be very like a book that they would not want to have circulating around there. Kind of like the Netflix series, because the Netflix series, Netflix isn't allowed in China.
It's not? I didn't even know that.
You need
to
VPN to use it. So she ends up being hired by them anyways, the government there, and they bring her to this place that is supposed to be shooting down what? What are they?
It's birds, but it reminded me a lot of The Regulars. You remember that show? We did it like 3 years back where there was this scene where a ton of these birds are just like, but here they're falling when they're getting close to this sonar.
It was like a sonic sonar weapon, yes. And then I thought sonar was supposed to be under the water.
They're testing out missiles. That's the main.
That's what they tell her. But by the end of the series, it's kind of like Invasion, where it's slowly revealed that they're actually trying to communicate with another force of life, kind of like a rival.
So then why would birds be dying in that case?
Well, it's still some sort of reverberation that they can't see, you know. It still is science, and so like this is messing with their waves, and but what they're sending off is a signal, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's just the positive effect of it is the birds.
We also get Jin. She was part of the Oxford Five, and she learns that Vera Yee was very obsessed with the Google Glass Plus that we talked about, the Google glasses, where she puts it on. And apparently it was this video game. I found when they've gone to the video game world, that was actually pretty interesting to me. I want to know more about what's going to happen there.
Yeah.
So she's trying to figure out why Vera Yee, right before she killed herself, because she's not the only scientist. A lot of other scientists have been doing this as well.
One gouged his eyes out at the beginning.
Yes.
And they're not doing it in like easy ways. And what we're led to believe a little bit is that they're saying science no longer exists, right?
Yes.
Which is a really, really stupid premise, like a dangerous premise to start your show off on, because it's like if a little kid comes up to you and says, like, what if there was no air one day? And in your mind, you're just like, well, if there's no air, everybody's dead in 2 minutes. Like, if science doesn't exist, then and the laws of nature no longer work, then what is the point of even telling this story? Because obviously nothing is going to, like, make sense or work, and suddenly we're all just going to die.
I don't know the content of the book, but I think that D.B. Wise is just trying to really lean into the fiction so he can have, like, all the rules kind of go out the window so he can do whatever he wants, but I'm not really sure. That's
They do have a plan, and it is finished trilogy, thankfully, so that they will be able to implement it. They say it's going to take 4 seasons. What would you end up giving this first episode?
Well, I wanted to talk about the ending really fast, because that's when Augie decides to invite, I think, Sal. That
Saul.
Was his name? Saul,
her
yeah.
ex-boyfriend.
Yeah.
There's definitely a past there.
And they end up going to a rooftop. Or no, sorry. They're just sitting on stairs, and they look at the sky.
She's warned. She's told by this lady who gives her the token and says, stop your nanotechnology work. That if she doesn't, then she should go out and check out the stars the next night. And that's when she invites Saul to do so with her. However, I do think I want to ask you this. Do you think that it would have been too on the nose to play Coldplay on the way out of that scene?
Why?
Look at the stars. Look how they shine for you. And then have it blinking as it was going. Do you think that would have been too on the nose?
Probably. Yeah. Because she looks at the sky. A ton of people do, actually, that know about what's going on. And it just keeps blinking again.
I just had Chris Martin in my head the whole time.
That's why I thought it was possibly a simulation, but I'm going to give the series a 5.
Like someone upstairs was just pulling a plug and putting it back in and pulling a plug just to like freak people out. The snow globe.
I'm going to give this series a 5.5 out of 10. There's interesting ideas to it, but overall most of the stories I find to be pretty forgettable, and I just don't have the same amount of intrigue to really keep watching. I don't know about you. What would you give it?
Here's the deal. It reminds me a lot of the early days of Dark, which I remember in season one, I totally wrote it off. And it wasn't until watching season two where I went back and realized, oh, this show is a lot more, there's a lot more depth here. And then it became like one of my favorite shows.
I have it compared to Dark. I also have it compared to Lost. It has the same amount of questions that I feel like they, that I don't know if
they're going
to have
answers to. Well, I know it's not going to be Lost because it is based on source material. Whether or not that source material, they're able to do it justice, and whether or not the actual source material is worthy of it, from everything I'm reading, it is. Mm-hmm. I'm also afraid because it's kind of like Invasion right now. So it could go one of two directions, but I will continue to watch it, which was a surprise by me because I've got so many shows that
I'm
watching
right now. To me, the pacing is just so slow. This is an hour series, and I felt like there was times during the middle where it was just dragging.
I'm here for at least the last day of Augie's adventure. I kind of want to find out what happens at the Zero. Because right now she's got a day left on the timer that only she can see. And did you recognize her, by the way?
No, I didn't.
She was from Ambulance, that Jake Gyllenhaal.
She was like the main in that,
she was
right?
like the tertiary lead, yes. And then she was also Jon Hamm's girlfriend in Baby Driver.
Oh, wow. Wait, she's been in so much then. Yeah.
Yeah, how did I not? She's also been in Dusk Till Dawn. No, she looks, they tried to science her up a little bit, but yeah, normally she's just playing like the girlfriend or like, you know.
And Saul, because of the token that he has, was saying the same amount of time that was on the counter as was in her head.
Yeah, the amount of times they use Morse code in these type of series, it just makes you think, like, how many kids do grow up learning that?
Don't you see the It Part 2 comparison? Because someone at the very beginning kills themselves, who's, like, part of this group, and then all of them meet up at a restaurant later on and start talking about it, and there's, like, this outer threat.
I thought you were originally saying because there's a time difference between two times, and we see what happens to the older version of the girl who got her dad killed.
There is that, too, yes.
That reminded me of the Godzilla series we did, Monarch Legacy mm-hmm. of Monsters, because we have the past storyline with the grandmother, and then we zoom that up and we see like an aged version of, this is the dad's character, right? With Kurt Russell
yes.
or whatever. But yeah, it just feels like they're borrowing from a lot of things, just like the book. I think he like based it off of Journey to the Center of the Earth, as well as like a ton of other sci-fi stuff. But
not the movie, right? You're talking about the book, Journey to the Center of the Earth?
Yes, the story, the original. And also, I think the original author said that he doesn't mind how it's adapted, whenever it's adapted. He's just very happy that it's adapted, which I think is a really positive way to go about it. It has a 70 on Metacritic. That's kind of high, especially if you consider
that generally positive reviews.
That's very positive usually, but it only has a 76% on Rotten Tomatoes, and it only has a 7.7 on IMDb.
It seems like the reviews are all in alignment. It's somewhere in the sevens.
But a 70 on Metacritic usually translates to like a 90.
No, that's true, because I think 80 is critical acclaim.
If you're looking for negative reviews, The Guardian called it flat and shallow, but NPR started off by saying Alien Invasion cripples science, and at that I was just like, so this show plays science dumb? And then I had to actually watch it to understand that. No, it's the whole premise is that all the machines and stuff that normally give us results stop working, and it's because of some reason.
And that way, it's almost like Revolution, that series that I think was canceled after two seasons on NBC. I think that premise was that like all machines stop working.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I don't know what I would actually give the show, though, because I will continue to watch it, but I want to spare a rating for it because I feel like I can't decide right now.
I do feel like there's going to be more that you'll understand as you keep watching it. But like even for the pilot, you don't have like an actual rating.
Nope, because I'm afraid that it'll change too much. Like I'm afraid if this show goes into the trash can for me, if I hear that there's going to be a huge cliffhanger at the end. And if that cliffhanger can either lead me to be like, oh, I can't wait for the next season, or like, I can't believe I spent that much time on this to then.
Okay, so your rating is not applicable. Is this anything like Archive 81?
No. Archive 81 was actually, it felt sort of conclusive, even though there was a big twist at the end. Like, that's what I'm saying is, like, if I can still feel like I've gotten something by the end of this, and they're just adding something bigger to it, and it's not like the Invasion ending, where, like, suddenly they're in the, we don't know who's possessed by who and all that stuff. Thanks for listening. We'll see you on the next episode. Hope you enjoyed this one. Bye.
Bye.